Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, good evening, not so mad science. We apologize for our late start. If you will bear with us for just one moment, we'll be getting started with you right away.
Far reaches of the known universe, we are proud to present Brother Harold Muhammad, soldier, scientist, scholar, Blog Talk Radio's finest, not so mad science, on Black Hole Radio.
Once again, and as always, we do apologize when we have technical issues which affect the programming of Not So Mad Science. We will be beginning promptly at 6:40 p.m. till that end. We have a little bit of our original starting music, Mr. Noel Pointer, with Night Song.
Thank you.
Welcome back, welcome back. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Because we are suffering from technical issues, we're going to have one more piece of fabulous music before we get rolling. So if you will please, 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 please bear with me, we will get right to it. So right now, we're going to have a little bit of Candy Staten, hopefully for not more than 2 minutes. That's right, that's right. She didn't want nothing else. But I think you need to know why she didn't want to know nothing else. There has been a lot of talk these days of the coming of the end of the world and God's punishment on the world and God punishing us with Donald Trump. War and rumors of wars are being spoken of all over the planet. This dispute, that dispute, economic strife, social unrest, emotional disturbances with family, friends, and boyfriends and whatnot. Things that we just cannot handle, things that we just cannot fathom, things that make absolutely no damn sense to anybody else, reasonably conscious, listening to the drivel that comes out of some people's mouths. But there is a danger, a very present danger. As we know, after the experience that we are still experiencing with one of the most dangerous diseases to ever hit the planet that supposedly migrated its way from Africa to here. And I won't mention its name because of the stigma attached to it. But needless to say, the most dangerous plague to ever hit the planet, because this human being functions as a virus, since his existence, wherever he has gone, he has took death, strife, pain, and suffering. He is mentioned in scripture as Yaqub's grafted devil or Jacob's children. But wherever he's gone, he took another plague with him. The most dangerous disease to cross the planet, which wiped out over almost two-thirds of the European population. is the bubonic plague. Well, many thought it was gone, and gone for good. But we know how diseases like to jump ship. Things seem to always escape and get out. Not that it would be something that some unscrupulous person or persons who wants to euthanize eugenically a significant portion of the planet Earth to ensure their individual survival. The bubonic plague has reared its deadly head in Asia. The country of China reports 3 cases of the most dangerous type of plague, the bubonic plague. Just 1 week ago, 3 patients had been admitted into the hospital in China, in Beijing, its most populous and most modern city, they were diagnosed with this disease, this medieval, definitely evil disease, is also known as the Black Death. It's coming sent shockwaves rippling through China's northeastern capital as authorities attempted to tamp down fears of an epidemic by censoring Chinese language news of the hospitalization of these 3 individuals. Last Tuesday, Beijing authorities announced a municipal hospital had taken in a married couple from Inner Mongolia, which is supposedly a sparsely populated autonomous region in northwest China, seeking treatment for pneumonic plague. One patient is said to be stable, while the 2 others are in critical condition, but are said to not be deteriorating, according to Beijing's Health Commission. The Chinese are believed to be an honorable people. But in today's times, where much of the world has bent over to kiss the ring, so to speak, of Satan's minions, where China has taken on a, though they have greater discipline as a body, they are a feudalistically ritual society that has taken on a Eurocentric ideal. Because of their affinity for European-type activities, and modeling much of their behavior behind this European ideal. Can we trust the word of the Chinese government and its health commission to say that this disease, this deadly disease, is contained? I think not. We need more proof. We need more evidence. But how is this proof and evidence obtained? I would say open this hospitalization, the testing and the care of these patients to the world community so that their doctors can then monitor the health and welfare of these persons to know and to see firsthand that this disease is being contained, this scourge, this black death, this plague is being contained and will not be let out. We know from history that the European disease was contained within the Caucasus mountain range to the west of them, and barren land to the east, north, and to the south. But they were let out across and through the Caucasus wall, and they returned to the Holy Land, bringing them with them death and destruction. The barbarians were at the gate. And with the release of these barbarians came the various plagues and diseases that haunt man, original man, today. The Chinese Center for Disease Control and Prevention assured the public on Weibo, spelled W-E-I-B-O, which is a Chinese social media site that is the equivalent of Twitter, that chances of a plague outbreak are extremely low. Liar, liar, the world's on fire, because that was the only way to ensure the death and destruction of this plague in so-called medieval times. The city's health commission has quarantined the infected patients, provided preventative care for those exposed to the couple, and sterilized the relevant medical facilities, according to their information. Well, as a person who worked in the hospital environment, in one of the major teaching hospitals here in America, I know firsthand just what is known by sterilized equipment and facilities and preventative care and quarantining. I know the procedures. I know the aspects of those procedures and the steps that are supposed to be taken. And things still got out. You have to be exceptionally diligent. If there are 3 steps to the process, take 6. If there are 6 steps to your process, take 10. If there are 10 steps to your process, take 20. Overkill ensures that is overly killed so that it can't get out. If they're in ICU, you shut down ICU and no one goes in there other than the workers who are to be handling that case. And then they are quarantined to ensure that they are not exposed to the virulent, destructive disease that they're treating. And they're treated to ensure their health, safety, and welfare. And then you strip the entire wing down to ensure that it doesn't creep through the vents, that it doesn't creep through the bodily waste products and materials that need to be destroyed, not thrown into the regular hospital refuse system, but burnt on site and destroyed. And then the ashes mollified, meaning dumped in a corrosive acid to ensure that it doesn't get out. Overkill to overkill it. Chinese police are also guarding the quarantined emergency room of the Chaoyang Hospital, where the 2 infected patients were first received and diagnosed. According to Caixin, an independent Chinese news outlet, on November 16th, authorities diagnosed a 3rd case of this pneumonic plague. The man, age 55, is also from Inner Mongolia, though authorities said his case was not related in any way to the couple medically evacuated to Beijing. 28 people who were in close contact with the man have been quarantined, and none have exhibited symptoms of the plague as yet. Well, I tell you, we know, and I'm going to say it for the heck of it, to ensure that we all understand, Ebola was supposed to be contained. Yet you had several people who flew from known areas of infestation and flew by commercial airlines to different parts of the world. Of the three versions of the disease, pneumonic plague is the only one that can be transmitted from one person to another by coughing, for example. The other variants are typically spread by infected fleas or animals. Pneumonic plague has symptoms of respiratory failure similar to pneumonia. Left untreated, it is fatal in all cases. Genetic sequencing research shows that the Black Death actually originated supposedly in or near China before variations of the plague spread to Europe and parts of North Africa and killed tens of millions of people during the 14th century. But I want to correct the history as they have recorded it in the articles that I have located on the Chinese problem. The Black Death was at its most significantly destructive worst in Europe. It was the European intrusion into southwestern parts of Asia. It was their intrusion that way and their lack of hygiene where this pneumonic disease began to invariably mutate. Yes, it was a disease that was in and near and around areas of southwestern China, but it was a contained issue for those areas. It was not until the intrusion of the Europeans and their filthy habits that it began to mutate and become something else, something far more deadlier. It was not the Black Death that destroyed Europe and parts of North Africa. Just as sickle cell anemia is a disease indigenous to parts of Africa due to the virulent malaria which existed, the body mutated sufficiently so that it had a natural defense against malaria. It was not until the incursion again and the filthy habits of the Europeans that malaria mutated and became something else and became got deadlier. Chinese health authorities reassured Beijing's residents this week that the most recent cases of the pneumonic plague, this Black Death, did not pose a threat. City residents should go into work normally and continue to seek medical treatment from hospitals. There is no need to worry about the risk of infection, the Chinese Center for Disease Control and Prevention said on its social media account. Again, can we trust their words? However, the Chinese people are far more proactive about their conditions and their situations than the so-called American Negro is here. They are not blind, deaf, and dumb. They were not stripped of their culture, their language, their God or their people. They were not broken with the incursion of the Europeans. They fought back and won. Because of this, they're far more proactive about ensuring their health, safety, and welfare from a lying government. Because their version of the CDC said that there's no problem, this has not allayed the widespread concern that the government is intentionally downplaying or even omitting information about the cases. The Chinese government did publicly confirm the illness on November 12th. But Li Jifeng, a doctor at Chaoyang Hospital, where the plague patients received treatment, wrote in a personal blog post this past Wednesday that the infected people were first transported to Beijing 9 days earlier on November 3rd. The doctor's blog post published on China's popular messaging platform WeChat was quickly removed by the censors of that blog post and that chat platform. In her post, Dr. Li Jifeng complained to be on duty at the hospital emergency room when the couple was brought in with symptoms of pneumonia. She encountered a middle-aged man who had already been feverish for 10 days and his wife who fell ill after taking care of her husband. To quote Dr. Li, after years of specialist training, she said, "I am very familiar with diagnosing and treating the majority of respiratory diseases." She said, "But this time, I kept on looking but could not figure out what pathogen caused the pneumonia." She said, "I only thought it was a rare condition and did not get much information other than the patient's history." On Weibo, users expressed dissatisfaction with the delay in making the plague cases public. Don't hide things like this. Let's face whatever it is. Cover-ups only make things worse, one user commented in a response to a Chinese news report. For some people, official statements left much to be desired. People must ask themselves, are China's local hospitals qualified to diagnose and treatment for pneumonic plague? Do provincial level health commissions have the capacity to prevent and control the disease? Furthermore, how were the two patients infected in the first place? What's the source? These questions await further investigation and information. These questions the world health community must have answers to, because as we learned with Ebola, and I'm going to say it in streetology, shit gets out. A third user of the Weibo site quipped, "I thought the threats of pneumonic plague were exaggerated. But the first thing I was asked at the hospital today was, have you been to Inner Mongolia recently? Do you have a fever?" End quote. The fear is already present. So for 10 days, you knew or more in advance, you knew. not take the time to inform the World Health Organization that the potential of Ebola, that the potential of the worst plague ever to grace the earth in recorded modern history, the bubonic plague was loose once again. Perhaps to allay public fears, Chinese state media has largely stayed quiet on the two newest cases of the plague. The central government has also asked digital news aggregators to block and control online postings related to the plague, according to an article posted in the New York Times. Yes, I told you all, I read 10 to 15 newspapers a day, and they're not the same. And at least 100 different ones in a week. China has a checkered history, or I should have a checkered record in managing public health crisis. In 2002, the same central government initially refused to acknowledge a nationwide outbreak of severe acute respiratory syndrome, otherwise known as SARS, an illness that has with flu and pneumonia-like symptoms. The virus traveled across borders for 5 months until Beijing publicly announced the epidemic, which is considered to be a rare moment of honesty. It was not until March of 2003 that Beijing officials in the city had 10 times as many infected cases as they had claimed mere months earlier. Ultimately, 329 people died of SARS. Supposedly wary of another epidemic, China has closely monitored recent outbreaks of the plague. Mongolia, which borders the autonomous regions where the infected couple lives, reported two fatal cases of bubonic plague just this year. So there's not just these three. There's another two people who died of it earlier in the year. And this was not until after the people ate raw marmots, which is a species of wild rodent that often carry the offending bacteria. In Mongolia, eating marmot rat, is thought to be good for the health. We do know that in Europe, because of the poor, sick, and sadistic sickening hygiene practices of the Europeans, which are still present today in Europe and here in America, they still have the same nasty habits. The flea carried plague. Well, they blamed it on the poor little flea, not their poor hygiene, throughout Europe. The flea. The busy bee is small to see. The ant is little too. They teach us all, however small, that a damn flea killed 2/3 of Europe. I know there's somebody out there right now cracking up at my little jingle, but it's the truth. Meanwhile, these experiences with treating plague patients have led China to take a role in helping other countries contain outbreaks. It was in 2017, China dispatched six public health officials to help control a local pneumonic plague outbreak in Madagascar. One of three countries hit hardest by the disease in recent decades. Yeah, you should send them there. You're looking to develop an underdeveloped area with your mechanizations and your equipment providing favor. You drop the disease there in your travel because it's in your blood already. This, dear friends, family, is not so mad science. With your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network, once again and as always, coming to you live from the city of Detroit. We're going to take a short break as we get ready for our next segment. Here's a little bit of Daniel Baby and Knock Knock.
As a boy, I shared a game with my father. Played it every morning till I was three. He would knock on my door, and I'd pretend to be asleep till he got right next to the bed. Then I would get up and jump into his arms. Good morning, Papa. And my papa, he would tell me that he loved me. We shared a game, knock, knock. Until that day when the knock never came. And my mama takes me on a ride past cornfields on this never-ending highway till we reach a place of high, rusty gates. A confused little boy, I enter the building carried in my mama's arms. Knock, knock. We reach a room of windows and brown faces. Behind one of the windows sits my father. I jump out of my mama's arms and run joyously towards my papa's, only to be confronted by this window. I knock, knock, trying to break through the glass, trying to get to my father. I knock, knock as my mama pulls me away before my papa even says a word. And for years, he has never said a word. And so 25 years later, I write these words for the little boy in me who still awaits his papa's knock. Papa, come home, because I miss you. Miss you waking me up in the morning and telling me you love me. Papa, come home, because there's things I don't know, and I thought maybe you could teach me how to shave, how to dribble a ball, how to talk to a lady, how to walk like a man. Papa, come home, because I decided a while back I want to be just like you, but I'm forgetting who you are. And 25 years later, a little boy cries, and so I write these words and try to heal and try to father myself, and I dream up a father who says the words my father did not, dear son. I'm sorry I never came home. For every lesson I failed to teach, hear these words. Shave in one direction with strong, deliberate strokes to avoid irritation. Dribble the page with the brilliance of your ballpoint pen. Walk like a god, and your goddess will come to you. No longer will I be there to knock on your door, so you must learn to knock for yourself. Knock, knock down doors of racism and poverty that I could not. Knock, knock on doors of opportunity for the lost brilliance of the black men who crowd these cells. Knock, knock with diligence for the sake of your children. Knock, knock for me, for as long as you are free, these prison gates cannot contain my spirit. The best of me still lives in you. Knock, knock with the knowledge that you are my son, but you are not my choices. Yes, we are our father's sons and daughters, but we are not their choices. For despite their absences, we are still here, still alive, still breathing, with the power to change this world. One little boy and girl at a time. Knock, knock. Who's there? We are.
Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. If I were to pose the question, most of you, my dear beloved listeners, would respond with, yes, the earth is round. But you would think that in the so-called modern era, with all the available evidence, that there would still be a number of people holding on to a medieval Eurocentric idea that the earth was flat. It is in that spirit and to this ignorance which I discuss tonight. And if there's anyone that has a question or wants to call in and pose their question, the call-in number is 563-999-3089. Hit that number one to put you in the queue. It'll give me a tone, and you can have your time to ask your question. Once again, that number is 563-999-3089. And if you wish to be a subscriber to Not So Mad Science and be notified of coming episodes and things, that call-in number is 323-927-2913. To become a permanent subscriber, call in at 323-927-2913. But let's get to some of this idiocy here. If the earth was flat, things would fall apart rather dramatically and absolutely fatally. Gravity? What gravity? Well, let's take a look. The earth is in fact a sphere, a ball, an egg-shaped ovular object. This is a simple fact that humans have known for thousands of years. It was incontrovertibly confirmed as soon as the first Soviet Union launched the Sputnik 1 satellite back in, what was it, 1957. And it went, as you say, around the globe. Nevertheless, there is a small but vocal group of people who insist that the world is flat. They're known in the common parlance as flat earthers. I'd rather just call them a bunch of damn fools, but okay. These flat earthers have emerged online in recent years, and they seem to be sowing doubt among the most basic aspect of reality. Many flat earthers put a great deal of effort into concocting alternative explanations for why the world behaves as if it's round when it's actually flat. Even though a spherical earth clearly fits the observations humans have made about the planet over the last few millennia. However, if Earth somehow were truly flat, it would not behave much like the planet we know today. In fact, humanity and everything else would be very, very, very dead. Flat. Pan to the head dead. To shape a cosmic body, a planet, a moon, a sun, a star, into a disk rather than a sphere or a ball, you've got to spin it really, really fast. According to David Stevenson, who is a planetary scientist at Caltech University in Pasadena, California. This would unfortunately destroy the planet by tearing it into tiny pieces, tiny particles. And I'll give you the proof of that in a moment. In the 1850s, European astronomer James Clerk Maxwell showed mathematically that a solid disk-like shape isn't a stable configuration in the cosmos. In his work he conducted regarding Saturn's rings, Maxwell's research predicted that Saturn's rings would be made of lots of small, unconnected particles. He turned out to be very right. When you look through a telescope at Saturn, its rings are comprised of tiny particles, and these rings are flat. And they spin very, very fast around the circumference and circumnavigate the planet of Saturn. Maxwell's research predicted this back in the 1850s. His math work was so correct, it also explains why there are no planet-sized disks floating around the galaxy. To flatten the Earth without spinning it very rapidly, you need to be Merlin. You need magic. Or a giant galactic globular-sized panini maker to flatten the Earth. And you'd have to stamp it flat. And that wouldn't last long. And here's why. Within a few hours after flattening the Earth into a panini bread, the force of gravity would press the planet back into a spheroid-shaped ball. Gravity pulls equally from all sides in every direction, which explains why planets are spheres, or nearly so, depending on the speed of a planet's rotation. Those forces may work against gravity to create a bit of a bulge at the equator, but it's still a ball. A stable, solid, disc-like Earth just isn't possible under the actual conditions of gravity, as Maxwell's math showed and proved. And once you get rid of gravity, everything about your planet rapidly stops making sense. The atmosphere, gone. Because it's held to the planet by what? Gravity. Tides from the oceans and the rivers, gone. Why? They're caused by the gravitational pull of the moon, which tugs on the oceans and causes them to be subtly bulged out as it swings by. The moon itself would also be gone, since every explanation of the moon's existence involves gravity. It just takes some simple calculation. I'm taken aback by the stupidity of some people. Gravity is also responsible for Earth's layered structure, with the densest material sinking to the core, lighter materials making up the mantle, and the lightest materials forming the crust. Without this layered structure, the planet would behave a lot differently. Earth's liquid outer core, for example, acts as a giant dynamic magnet. Correction, the Earth's liquid outer core is like a giant magnet, which creates the planet's magnetic field. It is this magnetic field help protects the planet's atmosphere from being stripped away by the effects of the solar wind from the sun, which also, in fact, scraped away Mars's atmosphere after that planet's magnetic field faltered some, supposedly, 4 billion years ago. I say it was longer than that. I'm saying it's closer to 66 trillion years ago that Mars lost its atmosphere. I think my math is a better math. If the Earth were flat, plate tectonics, the movements of rigid plates that make up the planet's crust, wouldn't work either. And this is according to James Davis, a geophysicist at the Columbia University Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory in New York City. When you do the calculations, just simple calculations like, if this plate is moving this much and that plate is moving that much, you have to do it on a sphere, according to his explanation to Live Science. To quote him, he says, you don't get the right answer. The answer that matches real-world observations, if you assume it's a plane or flat. So what are flat earthers doing? They spin different explanations for how all these observations could be possible on a flat planet. The problem, according to Davis, he says, is that these explanations don't have any basis in mathematics or physical reality. Well, when Maxwell predicted in 1850, or in the 1850s, that Saturn's rings were made up of lots of small particles, he did so by applying general knowledge of how gravity and rotational forces work. His essay on the subject, in fact, was mostly mathematical equations. Flat Earth theories don't work that way, according to Dr. Davis. The Flat Earth worldview also involves cherry-picking different explanations for different phenomena. In real life, the Earth and the moon are both round for the same quantifiable reason, gravity. Flat earthers believe, or rather they choose to have to invent independent explanations for both. And these independent explanations often contradict one another. This isn't how scientific theory works. Dr. Davis says, if we can explain 1,000 observations with one theory, a simple theory, that's better than explaining 1,000 observations with 1,000 theories. But setting all that aside, if the Earth were truly flat, it would mean that the millions of scientists who deny its flatness and those who have done so throughout history are united in a vast conspiracy for reasons that are flat out unfathomable to me. It almost makes the prospect of a galactic panini press look realistic. Almost. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. And we're going to come back with my favorite person's favorite song. A little Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Rising, I don't wanna feel I'm in the wrong place to be real.
Welcome back, welcome back. This is Dr. Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Calmer weathering patterns have arrived in the U.S. after snow, record cold, wildfires, and severe storms. As most of you should already know by now, this coming holiday weekend, hitting primarily on the holiday, there will be severe storms crossing these United States and Europe. Weather conditions in the United States over this past weekend turned calmer. Coast to coast, it was a harbinger of what's to come. Coming into that final week of October, when you consider the wide-ranging weather impact we've seen in the past parts in this country during the past, these last 2 weeks, 3 bouts of dangerous fire weather conditions in California since Thursday last, 2 rounds of early season snow from the Rockies into the plains and the Midwest going from Sunday past to Thursday past, all-time October record cold in parts of the West and the adjacent plain states, severe thunderstorms, flooding rain in the East on Halloween, wind damage from former tropical storm Olga in an area from southeastern Louisiana to the Ohio Valley. All events that are not typical. The weather pattern across the nation won't have any of these kind of impacts in the next few days. They'll be worse. A broad southward plunge of the jet stream has taken place in areas from the northern plain states to the Great Lakes, rippling through that band of strong upper-level winds will be a couple of weather disturbances. But those particular disturbances didn't have much impact tapping into the moisture from the Gulf of Mexico. That's because cool, dry air will cover much of the eastern two-thirds of the nation. However, what that meant is that there was little precipitation or rain across the United States these past few days, up until yesterday. The forecast in the coming weeks is for rain, wind, more wind, and more rain. State of Colorado, coming into the city of Denver, they're looking for 8 inches or more, but nothing less than 8 inches of snow in Denver, Colorado, on the holiday. Thunderstorms will be crashing through the Central States region, from Texas to Louisiana, swinging northward through southeastern Illinois, through Indiana and southern Michigan. on his way through Pennsylvania and New York. It appears the general jet stream pattern expected will persist into the at least the first half of November. On its way through to the end of the month, coming into severe storms into December. Watch the weather. Watch the weather. It is a strange thing taking place with weather, with these record-breaking temperatures, record-breaking snows, and severe rains in a season where rain should not be. Right now, in Europe, snow is to freeze the United Kingdom, England, for 3 weeks as a barrage of polar storms brings minus 10 degrees centigrade whiteout. Well, oh, minus 10 degrees. Wow, that's terrible. That's terrible. Minus 10 degrees centigrade. Well, for those of you that don't know, I'm going to tell you what minus 10 degrees centigrade is in Fahrenheit so you'll understand. Going to do a little bit of math in my head. And minus 10 degrees centigrade in Fahrenheit is, rather in centigrade is, let's see, carry the, oh, let's see here. That's 14 degrees Fahrenheit. And to do the math on that, so you can check my math, it's minus 10 degrees times 9/5 plus 32 equals 14 degrees Fahrenheit. That's the formula. Minus 10 times 9/5 plus 32. And that should give you what you need. In any case, this is what is to be expected in Europe for the next 3 weeks. A barrage of solar storms, or rather I should say polar storms, will kickstart a fortnight in their language of snow sparkling early predictions for, they're calling it a white Christmas, but they might as well expect hell. The blizzard conditions are going to be horrendous and terrible. And there's nothing they can do to stop it. Britain is about to be plunged into the deepest freeze amid warnings of wintry downpours. And I'm praying that their emergency packaging of food and everything else can hold out. Temperatures in parts of that country will struggle to rise much above freezing through the coming days and beyond. Bitter northerly winds across Scotland will make it feel close to 14 degrees. I'll use Fahrenheit so you'll understand. 14 degrees Fahrenheit, bringing a numbingly cold end to their autumn. Heavy snow threatens to hit swaths of Britain at the start of winter, with some long-range outlooks predicting a festive, so-called festive whiteout. I think not. I don't think there's going to be anything festive about it. James Madden, who is what they call an exacta weather forecaster, he says, and I quote, "We are looking at much colder weather, setting in through the second half of November and into December. It says there is a risk of more significant and destructive snow from around the middle of the month into the start of December. Although there may be some milder periods of weather during the run-up to Christmas, it is likely to turn much colder again through the second half of the month of December. Current indications suggest the possibility of a white Christmas, but a debilitating degree of snow in some parts of the country. Temperatures will plunge through the rest of this week as harsh frost and the threat of snow become widespread. Freezing air will pour in from the polar regions, steered toward the UK by the jet stream, which is currently swerving south of the country. What does this mean? England, Britain, doesn't generally get this kind of snow and debilitating cold. This is not typical. This is beyond the norm to the realm of extremely unusual weather. Watch the weather. Watch the weather. This is a dangerous time for us, one and all, as we're coming into the closing moments of tonight's program for Not So Mad Science. I do apologize for the late start. We're having some technical issues with getting things moving and grooving, but we're here now. But I do want to share something else with you this evening. Assuming the basic idea that the sole fundamental of human existence is to survive, the problem with man's behavior apparently resolved kind of rapidly. His interpersonal relations, the operations and the purposes of his organization, and the groups become understandable. But are we simply here to just survive, or are we here to produce? Produce what and why? We are here to produce God's glory. And each of us are endowed with a piece of Him to bring about a particular aspect of His glory to be blended with the aspects of another person to create the greater glory of God. Not from the individual, but from the collective. A single surviving individual does not a society make. A single surviving individual does not a culture make. For the original survivor is the one who gave existence to all. He requires no help to recreate existence. He did that on his own to survive. He said, "Kum by a kum, be," and it is. It is by his will alone and his will that we exist. This is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Once again, hoping that all that I have shared with you this evening, since I got no questions, you accept as true and you study it for yourself to verify that truth and not take my word for it. I pray I have said nothing to do any of you harm, but to give you pause to take a look and a much greater glance at the world about you, to create a better environment for your individual survival so that your individual survival enhances the survival of all around you. So I leave you in those immortal words of that great black politician, the greatest black politician to ever live, the late, great Adam Clayton Powell Jr., former pastor of the Abyssinian Baptist Church. Abyssinia, that haven for the Muslims and Prophet Muhammad 1,400 years ago. Peace and blessings be upon him. Keep the faith, baby. Keep the faith. In the coming weeks, very soon, we will have a grand show for you. We will have with us Yusuf Muhammad from the Nation of Islam to speak about the importance of prayer for the individual as a layman. We will be blessed with Brother Carlos Muhammad, student minister Carlos Muhammad, to give the theological representation of the importance of prayer and its power from the ecclesiastical point of view. We will have with us Brother Z. I call him Brother Z because he is an exciting and a dramatic preacher of the word, Mr. Vincent, who is an evangelical preacher who has a program called the Midnight Prayer Service on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays to talk about the importance and the power of prayer from the evangelical perspective. I invite you one and all, and I'll let you know exactly what night that show will be. But I'm going to keep promoting and promoting and promoting until we got all our ducks in a row, that all persons on the program will bring you a perspective. We will be blessed to have with us David Trusty from the Native Nations, who will give us the importance of prayer from our Native American brothers and its practice. I'm asking this question: what is the importance and the power of prayer in these day and times in which we live, where all seems to be at loss? Once again, this is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Wishing you all well, once again, and I hope to see you soon, very soon. Let's have dinner sometime, real soon, maybe Sunday. Good night.